this is a first for us, and we have a very special guest. We call it first, of course. We have had multiple podcasts on our channel, but this is a first because this is our first online podcast, but also with a very, very special guest, someone we've looked up to even before we started this channel. It's someone we've followed for a lot of years. And honestly, even though we've met cricketers, this seems a lot more nerve-wracking because he is someone we look up to. He's been a writer with the ESPN. He's written a lot of books, recently released The Art of Batting. He has a YouTube channel of his own, The Good Areas Podcast, with over 100,000 subscribers. He's made films. He's done so much more. Jared Kimball, thank you so much for joining
this with us. Yeah.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
This is great, Pratha, because for one, I can still feel my heart beating. But just to give
Wait a minute. Let's just get important here. What's the most famous cricketer you've met?
We have met
a bunch of people. So we are based out of Bangalore, where the NCAA is.
No. And you've had one sound simple question. Don't give me your life story. Who's the most famous cricketer you've met? I need to know who I'm more famous than
Sachin.
Oh, Virat. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. I would have thought you'd be more nervous meeting me than Virat Kohli. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, go on. Oh, yeah. So to give you a little, just an idea of what we're doing right now, the England-India series is just going to start. It's around the corner. If anything, by the time we put this out there, it would have started day one. It's to talk about the lineup and potential captain and the new captain, Shubman Gill, and then Jasprit Bumrah. There's a lot of things that we will go over, a lot of stats to think about and tinker with. So yeah, Pratap, you can take it away.
Cool. I think the first thing on everyone's mind is obviously the Shubman Gill being the captain now for the Indian team. Firstly, do you think India has gone the right way? Obviously, it's not something that can be reversed now. But what are your thoughts on Shubman, the captain? Also, considering that he at some point was sort of fighting for a spot in the 11 itself.
I mean, I'm not too worried about that because everyone's been fighting for a spot, haven't they? Like, unless you're going to give it to Jaiswal, like, what are we doing here? Look, I don't think he's a great captain at the moment. But he's obviously still young and still developing. And, you know, Gujarat did really well until the end of the season. So there were some good signs there. But I don't think he's the most natural captain.
Having said that, though, like, I'm sorry to cut you off, but like, what makes you say the fact that he's not the most natural captain?
So not this year, but last year, we could tell exactly what overs he was going to bowl with which bowler beforehand.
Okay.
Right. So I was doing a show with Rob Barron on Cricket 8, and we were like, and so this over will be bowled by this. And everyone thought we were geniuses, but we're like, he's just been doing it over and over again. Right. That tells me he's not reading the game. Right. He's just coming with a plan and he's going to execute that plan. And that's fine. I mean, Pat Cummins does that to a certain extent as well.
Yeah.
But Pat Cummins has probably matured a little bit beyond that. You know, the amount of times you watch Gujarat and they have kind of plan A. Right. And they don't really have a plan B of any kind. If you compare that to, you know, people like Dhoni and Stokes and Owen Morgan, Stephen Fleming, those sorts of guys, they have an idea of what they're going to start with and then they just go with it. Right. That's a natural captain. Right. Doesn't mean that they're always great. I've seen plenty of natural captains who are still, you know, poor decision makers and not very good leaders and, you know, terrible with strategy. But that's a natural captain when you can go out there and just be like, okay, we're going to try this today. And we'll give it a go. Aaron Finch, perfect example of a guy like this, of like Aaron Finch before every game would change what he would do based on, you know, how he felt about the game or the pitch or the situation. I don't think Shubman Gill, Mr. Our top order will score all of our runs and our bowling lineup will be literally printed out before we go onto the field. Is that kind of guy, right? So that's one kind of captaincy. It's, as I said, it makes him probably more in the, Pat Cummins sort of thing. Of like Pat Cummins is not a bad strategic captain, but Pat Cummins is very much, this is my plan, and this is the plan that we're going for. We've thought about this for a long time. And if you compare that to Ben Stokes, where he's just like, okay, let's rip off the plan and let's try something new, right? So that's the different kind of stuff. Also, you know, there's a lot of problems with masculinity and leadership and all these sorts of things in the world. But generally, we gravitate towards, you know, big dumb idiots who are loud, like Donald Trump, right? Rather than actual good leaders, right? And Shubman Gill is not that kind of person, is he? He's just not. He doesn't captivate a room like Virat Kohli did, right? Or Ravi Shastri did, right? And So again, we don't have that. What we do have, I think he's very good at maybe some of the other parts of captaincy that are not as easy to see, which I think he's very good at understanding that everyone needs a role and everyone needs a definition within that role, and those sorts of things. So I do actually think that's a strength that he has. But within that, as I've said, I do think there are some other issues with the way that he is able to just turn things around. But I don't think he's anyone's idea of like if you were making an action movie, I don't know if Shubman Gill's the guy you make as your lead guy, right? Like if we're fighting the aliens tomorrow, maybe Shubman Gill's not the guy you tap on the shoulder. Doesn't mean he can't be a good leader, because that's a very different question. But having watched him for a couple of years, I don't know. I haven't felt inspired by his leadership from afar. The players in his team might be different. And sometimes that is the case, right? We don't know. That's why most conversations about captaincy are basically masturbation.
I didn't think the sentence was going there. But I have a counter to that, though. I mean, we made an entire video of how we don't think Shubman Gill should be the next captain. But when you take the example of how he was very predictable in the T20 format, we've seen captains who aren't all that great in the white ball, but they just come into their own in the red ball game. You've seen likes of Rohit Sharma, or even MS Dhoni for that matter. Statistically, they don't have the best red ball record as compared to white ball. And so do you think that could potentially, and this is just a question out of thin air, it's very, you would have to guess, but do you think potentially Shubman Gill could come on his own, in his own, in the red ball format?
Would you date a girl who burned up all of her ex's possessions, thinking that you're a better partner, right? And so because you're a better partner, she probably wouldn't react the same way that she did with her ex? Or would you rather date someone who's actually really good and has a good relationship with her ex, even though she's clearly moved on? Like, what are the two options that you would pick in that situation? Right? Like, you're right. It's weird the way that we talk about sport. I fundamentally don't understand it sometimes, because I understand your point. But what you're basically saying is sometimes people are slightly better at this than they are at the other thing. And so maybe he'll be that. Maybe he'll be shitter. Right? Maybe he'll be terrible. Possibly, maybe he'll be the worst Red Bull captain of all time. I'm not saying he will be, but if we're playing that game,
that does in the case.
Yeah. It can go in any direction of all time. So I think, you know, the way that you look at something like that is he's a very formulaic captain. Generally, formulaic captains struggle in Red Bull cricket because the formulas disappear, right? So Pat Cummins is quite more similar to Shubman Gill than others. Pat Cummins is probably slightly better in one-day cricket and T20 cricket at times, because he's like, I understand the formula of this, I understand the pattern of this, and I can come with my plan and then slight deviations on that. Well, Test cricket sometimes has no plan, right? Like, sometimes, the Cricket Australia a few years ago, got a bunch of Silicon Valley people to come in and come up with algorithms for Test cricket. And I think the first company got back to them and just said, no, this is stupid. You're wasting your money. You can't do it, right? Which means that, you know, if you look at someone like MS Dhoni, who's the most algorithmic person in the world, and I'll tell you what, Joe Root is another guy. Those are very algorithmic people. They make the right decisions. They weigh everything up and they do it. And in Test cricket, the right decisions aren't even always the right decisions, right? It's an infinite system. And so I do believe when you look at something like that, it is very, very hard to ever get into a position where you can understand if someone's going to succeed in it or not. I wouldn't look at him and go, he's not the most inspirational white ball captain. He can't be a red ball captain. But that's all we have to go on, right? So we'd be idiots if we sat here going, oh, he'll be much better at red ball cricket. We don't fucking know. We didn't even make it up.
Yeah.
So that's true. I was just playing the
also, you should definitely date the second girl, not the first girl.
Yeah. That is, that's implied. If it isn't, there's an issue.
We'd hope so. Yeah. But I also want to know what your thoughts were on Jasprit Bumrah being the captain. So this was our take, right? So the video that we made, we implied that Jasprit Bumrah could potentially be a good captain. And so the idea of why he wasn't made the captain is because he can't play all five test matches.
Workload management.
Was completely fine, because if you're playing the first three, I know this is a very dicey take, so you correct me or you tell me if this is a very useless thought. But what we thought is he plays the first three, four test matches, depending on how the matches goes and his workload. And if he can't play the last or the last two test matches, then you give Shubman Gill the captaincy, because he's only, 26, 20, 25? 26.
Yeah.
He's only 26. So he gets the practice of being the captain. So 2 years after this WTC cycle, Shubman Gill can take over the captaincy if he wants to. But until then, you make Bumrah the captain. and he captains majority of the series, because you're not every day playing five test match series. You're doing that against England. You'll potentially do that against Australia, but you're not playing a series against Australia anytime soon. Yeah. So there's no talk of workload as of yet, as such. So what were your thoughts about potentially making Bumrah the next captain?
Oh, I would have made him captain, but I got the feeling he didn't want to be captain. I don't know how you guys felt.
That's what the reports said,
Yeah, so
yeah, there were reports.
I mean, there is always that argument, of course, that the person you should give leadership responsibilities to is the person who doesn't want it, and the person who does want it is the person you shouldn't give it to. You know, but regardless of that, like, if he didn't want to do it and he wasn't going to play every game, I don't know how that's going to work, right? Like, as in from a strategic point of view, from a mental point of view, from a, you know, all those sorts of things. Look, realistically, we put too much pressure and too much power into the captain's hands already, right? And if this was a well-run sport and was professional the way that it should be, you would have a situation where someone could captain for one game and someone could captain for the next game without their... If the team knows how they're going to play, right, there shouldn't be that much difference between game to game, right? But we don't. We believe in the magic captain thing of, like, this guy's a wizard and this other guy's a dwarf and this other guy is a magic pixie dream girl. And, you know, this other, you know, we kind of believe everyone has, like, special powers with their captaincy. And so you couldn't possibly do that. But realistically, if you know your team plan, like, Ollie Pope is not Ben Stokes, right? But if you watch Ollie Pope when he's been in charge of England, he knows what to do because their game plan is really obvious, right? That, for me, is how you should probably lead.
Do you think that's the case in test format too? Like, you're fine with, like, you think having different captains in different matches would work in the red ball format?
Well, I don't think it would work because I don't think cricket's ready for it emotionally. It would. There's no reason why it shouldn't work, right? Like, if you know, if you think of, I'm trying to think of some of the good sides. If you think of the England white ball side, the West Indies white ball side, the baseball era team, Pat Cummins could go on and off the field. I think there are teams that already have this ability, right? Once they know what their method is, I don't think there's that much can go wrong with it. The problem is, as I said, that we assign these magical powers to captains, like, you know, and we think that only this person can make this decision. And it's like, I don't know if you guys saw this. This was so fascinating to me the other day. Steve Smith gets injured during the World Test Championship final and he goes off the field, right? And because everyone thinks that Steve Smith is a tactical genius, that's the reason why Australia don't take another wicket, right? I counted 16 different plans that Pat Cummins went through, right? Like, he literally went to all, and I've never seen Pat Cummins change his plans as often or as quickly as he did in that game, right? He's got Usman Khawaja on the field. He's got Travis Head on the field. He's got Josh Hazlewood on the field. He's got Alex Carey on the field. Like, he's got so many other smart, interesting, tactical players who've captained, who, you know, have got, you know, a different thing. But no, Steve Smith was off the field. So suddenly Pat Cummins was naked, right? If that's the case, then there's something fundamentally wrong with your entire cricket team, right? So to get back to your point, Jasper Bumrah, And you know, Jasper Bumrah, it should be that general manager, but it seems like Ajay Dagarkar is kind of that role now. But let's say it's him. Him and Gautam Gambhir should be getting together and they should all be hired. Whoever's hiring them should be hiring them going, this is the kind of cricket we want to play, right? Maybe one of them sells it. All three of them come together and go, this is the kind of cricket. This is what we want to do in this situation. This is how we want to play. And we want to be flexible. We want to be whatever it is that you want to do. Then anyone should be able to captain that. Right? Because you then have the template for how to play cricket. Unfortunately, and I can say this as someone who's worked with cricket teams, it's often all in the captain's head, right? And it's never fully discussed. And there isn't communication because these sports are run by men and men are idiots, right? And so there's no reason why. I mean, what do you think happens in major businesses when there's a woman CEO who goes off to have children? Do you know what I mean? Does the company cease to exist? No. They have 6 months of someone else who's come in to do that job because that person who is being the acting CEO understands exactly where the company should be going in that time, right? Why is it different in cricket? We pretend that it's different. It's nonsense. Yeah. We have NBA franchises where the coaches get sick or go on personal leave all the time. We've seen that with football managers before. Right? Yeah. We're even doing it with international cricket coaches. So we can do it with our coaches, but with our captains, you must be available for all games. No. So we'll eventually get there. We're not there at the moment. I think your workload balancing, though, just get back to that, because I do think that is an interesting point. My issue with the workload thing is that you're thinking that you can only get tired in a five test series.
Exactly.
It's not really how it works, is it? He could get tired after one test. So that's the problem with a bowling captain, I think, in back-to-back tests. Mm-hmm. Having said that, Australia's been fine with Pat Cummins, right? So
yeah, exactly.
It depends on which way you look at it. I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I've been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
But I think that also adds into your point of how a team itself functions, because Pat Cummins could very easily go out and Steve Smith could take over. That's where you also have the experience of Steve Smith that comes in. But I think Australia as a unit itself is probably more sort of team oriented in their goals. Whereas with India, and because of how the culture has been, the captain does sort of become the alpha out there. So, yeah.
You're saying that Australia hasn't had that before with Steve Waugh as captain and Alan Border as captain and Ian Chappell as captain. We haven't had that alpha thing before.
That's not what I'm hinting at.
Recent times.
The new look Australian side.
I think if you look before Cummins, you know, there was, Smith was very much in charge. I think that's fair. Yeah. But Michael Clarke was certainly that kind of person. I think Australia's always been a step ahead of the rest of the cricket world when it comes to understanding that cricket is a team sport. Everyone else still thinks of cricket as an individual sport where, you know, we need Clive Lloyd to bring us all together. And it's like, in Australia, that's such a bizarre thing, right? Like, I've even when I've worked for franchises, I see the Australian players are just like, okay, we're in it together. We're going to do this. And like, you know, some of the other overseas pros are like, well, I'm here for 3 weeks to do this, to try and get this contract, right? And you know, it's something to do with Australian culture. It's certainly something to do with Australian sporting culture that we have this. Mm-hmm. And so again, it's a very, very important thing. Whereas like the vice captain role is not very important in Australian cricket, right?
It's officially announced by the Indian team.
And the India believe in the vice captaincy so strongly. So you understand that you're still building the class structure in, right? Whereas to me, it doesn't really matter. You could almost make a claim that like, you should have a leadership group of four or five players within a leadership group. Makes a lot more sense than having a captain and a vice captain. And India used to have announced their deputy vice captain sometimes as well. I mean, we just had an IPL franchise say who their vice captain was. Who gives a shit, right? Like,
exactly, yeah.
We need to know who's in charge on that day on the field when it happens, who's taken over. We don't actually need to know who the vice captain is. And as I was just saying, there might be a situation like if you think of the England team of a few years ago, you know, when Alistair Cook was captaining, you've got Joe Root and you've got Jimmy Anderson. You actually might want both of them in different times to take over or to do it as a group, right? As to come together and do that. That would have helped Anderson and it would have helped Root, right? True. And so, again, you have this situation where I think the way that it's done is still that very English thing of you're the captain and you're the whatever the person is, you're the major and you're the sergeant and you're a bootlicker, right? Like it's like that's not how these things work. Like who wouldn't listen to Travis Head on a cricket field, right? Like he's a really interesting guy, he's captain from a very young age. I don't care if he's the vice captain or not. And so I think again that's where we should be going. And I know that I think it was England. I think it was with Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad. They kind of started looking at those two guys as bowling captains, right? Yeah. So they still had their captain out there. But they, if you have a look, how many times they would have a meeting with the three of them, right? And one of the reasons they did that was because Anderson and Broad look at the game differently than Cook does, right? And so you want to get the bowler's perspective and the batting perspective maybe at the same time. That's actually very hard to do in one person. So again, as I said, if we think about these jobs as magical dream positions, right, of like, you know, the wizard in the corner who can be captain, so the other 10 people are what? Nothing? Like they have nothing to add to this situation?
Yeah.
And so if you look at a young side like this, you know, Bumrah, the best thing you can do with Bumrah at the moment, if he's not going to captain, is make him part of this bowling leadership group, right? And make sure that he's involved in all this, because why would you not want to use his cricket brain out on the field? And it's something I noticed really in Australia when I played club cricket in Australia, there's conversations about the cricket, and then the captain mm-hmm. makes a decision about it. And in England, the amount yeah. of times I've gone up to a captain and tried to tell them something, they're like, no, I'm in charge. I'm like, what? Like, yeah. what? You're in charge because you're the person who picked up the phone and made sure that all 11 people turned up at the ground, right? Like, at a certain point, like, there's a... And so I think that's where cricket needs to get to, is to get away from that idea that, like, you know, places like Australia and India, where they go on about that, you know, the captain is the most important person, who's not the president or the prime minister and all that. And it's like, no, that's not actually the case anymore. And if that's how you're running your cricket team, then your team's only going to be good if you have a great captain, and it's going to be terrible yeah. if you have a bad captain. That's not yeah. what you want, right? You want to use the collective wisdom of the entire group.
Yeah, this is such an interesting conversation, because even in our club matches, like, the captain's just everything. He decides everything yeah. that is true. Think about it. Now, we can always go on about the captaincy. Let's start talking about the playing 11. Not playing 11, but the players who are selected. And before we get into that, I mean, it's a question we thought we have to ask you. Do you think the retirement of Virat Kohli and Rohit Sharma, at least in the test format, if not, I mean, okay, fine, I'll just put it across. Do you think the retirement of Virat Kohli and Rohit Sharma going to England is a blessing in disguise for the Indian team? Or do you think one of them, if not both of them, should have been in this tour?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because, look, I think he can replace their runs of recent times pretty easily, and you might even get an upgrade on their runs. So there's no argument there. I don't think even they would argue on that at that on this point. But it's a big leadership vacuum, and it's not the only one. Rahane's gone, Pujara's gone, Ashwin's gone. You're losing. So in the business world, what they would call institutional knowledge, right? There's a lot of guys on this tour who haven't toured England before, who haven't played test cricket, a lot before, who are still learning what it means to be a professional, right? You know, if you watch American sports, they do these really interesting things in American sports where they'll get like a bunch of young players together, right? But then they'll go and hire like some guy and they'll give him like a $20 million contract. And you're like, he's not even good anymore. Like, why are they getting this guy? And then you realize what they're trying to do is show the players what professionalism is, right? Because if you put a bunch of kids there, they don't always understand exactly what they need to do. But if you can put a professional there to be like, this is what we do, this is why we say to the media, hey, stop bullying this person, all the sorts of little things that you need to do.
Yeah.
This team has a big vacuum of that, right? Jadeja, from my understanding, is not someone who is, you know, a very vocal person. Mm-hmm. Jasper Bumrah is probably also not a very vocal person. Or if you look at Ashwin and Virat, though, they were very vocal. Right. And also they think about cricket in a very different way. So they would probably spark up conversations in a way. So there's a huge leadership vacuum, and playing test cricket against England at the moment is a confusing thing, right? It's not a normal form of test cricket that they play. So if you are not calm, right, it can bite you. And, you know, we laugh now because India won so easily against them over there, but it wasn't that far away from England winning two tests in that series, right?
Like, 100%. And it was a lot closer than the scoreline says. Yeah,
exactly. And when I talked to Rahul Dravid, he admitted that they thought they had it. They thought they had all the plans in place. And then Ollie Pope plays that innings and they're all like, are we wrong? But so when you have Rahul Dravid and Ashwin and Virat and Rohit in the room, they're like, no, we're not wrong. Let's give this one more test. And let's try and grind out a win in one more test, and then we think we can break them. Does the current team have that, right? Does it have those kinds of personalities to not panic, right? And, you know, it's not – India and Australia are harder places to tour than England is. But England is still – there's a lot of press. You know, the crowds are really, really vocal. They're going to be full houses, right? Like, there's going to be a lot going on. You only need one Zach Crawley 150, and you're suddenly like – everything I know about cricket is wrong.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, it goes out the window very fast, especially when your back's against the wall. But just on that, because you've spoken about these players when they were in the side and the kind of leadership impact they have and the hole they've sort of left behind now, how different is it, especially with you having worked with teams, how different is it for a player to be in the squad and have that leadership impact versus the same player coming in post-retirement probably as a mentor to the same squad? Have you seen that have a different kind of effect because the playing 11 sort of feels that, okay, this man is not a part of the team anymore, of the 11, and so we don't regard his opinion probably as much as we would if he was in the squad itself?
It's hard to be a mentor when no one really knows what this job is, right? It's made up.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, is there another sport that even has mentors? I don't even know how we ended up with mentors. I think it was just to have Viv Richards hanging around an IPL team, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, I mean, South I'm Africa. Not. Yeah, I still don't really. I don't really understand the whole mentor thing to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a player recently, a former player who'd retired, who contacted me to be like, you know, what should I do? And I was like, I don't know, because I don't know what the job is. And I remember, God, who was it? It was another famous player that I was chatting to at one stage. And he said, the owner just said, just hang out with the players. And he's like, okay, but like I think I have more to offer than that. I think Steve Waugh did it for the 2019 Ashes? And Steve Waugh was like, I just feel uncomfortable mentoring the players. So he ended up mentoring Justin Langer. So Justin Langer is coaching and he's got like a mentor with him the whole time, like a sounding board.
Yeah.
That's my issue with it at the moment is,
mm-hmm.
you know, so when we've had certain players, so I remember when Ricky Ponting worked with the Australian team, he was really there as a mentor, but they told him he was batting coach. And I think Steve Waugh was the same, right? I think they told them they were batting coaches, but they were mentors. Mm-hmm. That allows the player to show, to show that they actually have a lot to impart and everything else. When you're that kind of KP level mentor, right? Which I don't know if he was hired for social media or what the full thing was there. I think if you're a player, you would be a little bit more confused, right? There is what I would tell you is especially players under the age of 24, 25.
Right.
If you are with the team and you have earned your way to be with the team, whether you're a former player or a coach or an analyst or a physio or whatever, and you're wearing the uniform and you're hanging out with the coach and maybe the general manager and the owner or all those sorts of people, there's a natural respect that is built in. And so if you are a former player as well and you bring that, I think that's always there. But the problem is that sometimes when you have those sorts of things, because as I said, the mentor doesn't know when to be involved and when not to be involved. And, you know, I remember years ago, it's a really fascinating one because these two guys are quite close. But when I was at St. Lucia, that Kyron Pollard was playing as captain and Darren Sammy was in the team. Now, Darren Sammy basically owns St. Lucia, right? Like as an island, not the franchise, but everything else.
Yeah.
And Darren Sammy is such a natural leader, right? And he would interject. Oh. And sometimes I felt like even though what he was saying was perfectly great, it would sort of come at the end of like Kyron Pollard's big speech. And it was like, and it wasn't perfectly timed. And it wasn't that anything that Darren Sammy had said was incorrect. It was just that it didn't quite work the way that it needed to work, right? So all those sorts of things can be awkward. And that's why it's no different than a cricketer. They need to know what their definition is and what their role is. And I think we just give mentor out and then the person has to work it out. I'm sure there are great mentors. And I can tell you there's some terrible ones out there. And I don't blame them because I don't think they know what to do. I remember when Greg Chappell was around the Australian team and I think he was a selector. Yeah, he must have been a selector. But because he's Greg Chappell, he just sort of kind of like started turning up and he was like around and stuff. And he didn't have the best relationship with that crop of players. Like I'm not saying that he was right and they were wrong or anything, but I just remember there was a couple of players who were a little bit put off by all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he ended up causing a distraction when actually Greg Chappell is a cricketing genius, right? And had he been used in the right way and, you know, and be like, Greg, we don't want you to turn up whenever you want, but actually this is what we do want you to turn up with, or these are the situations you want to deal with. Because I don't even think Greg Chappell knew what he was supposed to do. So you have to be careful. And then it depends on the players. I know when England got really good around 2013, whenever they were number one in the world in tests.
Yeah.
When they beat Australia, and I think India.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That whole period. They did well in Sri Lanka tour as well, I think. Yeah, you know, there was a lot of good cricket in that period. I think they lost to Pakistan, and then they lost to South Africa afterwards. But in between that, they were a really good side.
Mm.
That team was really good, right? They got to number one in the world and they were quite confident with themselves. And they would like switch on Sky and Mike Atherton would be on Sky going, so-and-so should have done this and they should be doing that. And the guys would go on their phones and look up and be like, he averaged 35 in Test cricket. Who's he telling us about anything, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you know anything about cricket, you know why he averaged 35 in cricket. He played in a bad era. Ambrose, McGrath and Walsh took him like 60 times or something ridiculous in his career, right? But they didn't live that. And so sometimes those things are hard to to transfer a little bit. So you can't live on your reputation as a player alone. You have to go on. Like, I've been around some big name assistant coaches that people do not respect at all, and they didn't respect them because of their playing career. It was because they weren't trying very hard as coaches, right? Or they weren't very good as coaches, right? So you have to find a role for yourself. And again, it's one of those things where cricket is, you know, from what I could tell anyway, the mentor is basically a thing that was made to keep famous cricketers around franchise cricket, right? So that you could have them on the belt, you could have them on the, I could be wrong. Someone needs to do a long read into this one day and work it out. Mm-hmm. But I just think that some of the owners wanted to hang around with Viv Richards, right? And he didn't want to coach, and he wasn't going to coach. So I was like, well, if we sit him on the boundary here, and there is an element of, I remember Trent Woodhill saying that when Trent Woodhill was offered the Australian coaching, batting coaching position, and he said, look, I'm more than happy to do it during the outer season, but if you're going to the Ashes, I think it's actually better if you have Ricky Ponting or Steve Waugh, right? And he said, because at that stage, it's not about technical stuff. There's not much we can do for them technically if they're out of form during the Ashes. But what it is great is to have Ricky Ponting feeding a ball into a ball machine and have some average player smashing it through covers and Ricky going, great shot. So there is an element of all that working, right? But again, you have to understand what your role is and how you're important to the side. Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
I'm going to take a huge detour from this because, I mean, to be fair, what you're talking about, the mentor, we had the whole conversation about it because when Kevin Peterson was announced the mentor for Delhi Capitals, you were wondering why, like, what's the point? Because they already have a batting, bowling and a fielding coach and a head coach and all of that. But yeah, taking a huge detour. So Pratip, actually a couple of minutes before joining this call, we posted a video about KL Rahul. And now he might be the most important batter for India in this England tour. Which is very interesting because, correct me if I'm wrong, because if you look at his stats, for someone who's played at least 50 test matches, he has the worst average in the top six batters for the Indian team in the history of Indian cricket. And even if you look at his average as it is, he averages, what,
33.5.
Except in the last two England tours,
done well. He's got centuries. More importantly, I think he's been able to bat time. He's been able to ensure that the openers can make it past the two ball phase. Possibly making it slightly easier for the batters coming in.
And then we have also made a baseball video about how since 2022, the England batters have gone about 4.8 runs per over, whereas the opposition have gone on about 3.5 runs per over. KL Rahul is a batter who takes his time, right? He grinds it out. He leaves the ball very well. He plays the ball as late as possible, something that would work in England. What are your opinion on how important KL Rahul would be, especially because he has experience playing in England, but also he'll be accompanying Yashasvi Jaiswal, who, again, opposite style of play. He loves to attack. We saw that in the practice games as well. We've seen this in Australia. We've seen this in India. That's how he's batted in first-class cricket throughout his career. And so what are your opinions on KL Rahul and how important he will be for the Indian team?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, you know, the way that you look at it. One of the things when you talk about his batting average, I don't know if you can take that seriously because I can't think of another player who's played in a similar low-scoring era as KL Rahul has.
Right,
I would have to go back to see the 50s were quite a low-scoring era, but I wonder how many Indian players actually played 50 test matches in that era.
Yeah. Whereas that's a small number, yeah.
Yeah, because that's the only other one. There's some brief periods of time where there's a bit of a dip. Obviously, 90s are a little bit lower. One between the late 70s and 80s when the batting averages drop a little bit as well. So there's a couple of times when we see it, but I understand why people are looking this up, and not everyone has access to the full information. And so I'm sure that is a big part of it. But if you play in an era where all the batting averages are lower anyway, you're probably going to have a low mark, right? Like that just makes sense. Whereas if you play in an era where the batting averages are higher, like how much better has KL, well, how much better has Ian Bell been than KL Rohl, right? And Ian Bell played in a pretty good era when people made a lot of runs.
Yeah, true. But then if you compare him to like his colleagues, for example, so he debuted around 2014 and even until recently, right? Even if you compare him to the other batters around, they've played better. I mean, in terms of averages, not better. It's very subjective, but in terms of averages, because even Murali Vijay and I think Shikhar Dhawan in the same period where KL Rahul opened, I think, if I remember that video that we made long ago correctly, they did score in terms of average.
But isn't Murali Vijay a perfect example of someone who averaged 30 away from home? And so, yes, his batting average looks really good, but can you travel with him anywhere, right? So, again, that's what I mean. So if you just look at averages with KL Rahul, I think you're kind of missing the point that the genius of KL Rahul is really well beyond the average, right? It is the flexibility that he can bat in multiple positions. I'm just going to go, he's not a very good wicketkeeper, but he's a better wicketkeeper than Murali Vijay. So he instantly gives you a backup wicketkeeper in a squad, right? You don't have to, I know they've got extra wicketkeepers this time, but you don't have to take an extra wicketkeeper if you want to. Yeah. He can also bat any position from 1 to 6. Murali Vijay can't bat in any position from 1 to 6. And so he is a different kind of player from that kind of point of view. And I would guess, I'm saying that Murali Vijay averaged 30 away from home. I'm assuming it's probably lower than that if you just look at Asia, outside of Asia as well. So the skill of KL Rahul is the flexibility that he has. The issue really is that people thought he was going to be another Virat Kohli, and he hasn't got anywhere near that level.
Oh yeah,
right. And he's
definitely.
And so
I think.
So then you end up with the Shane Watson
potential he showed. Yeah.
Yeah. So then you end up with the Shane Watson parable, right? Where it's like Shane Watson isn't being actually compared to another player who's like him. He's being compared to what Australia thought they were getting, which is someone who would average 48 with the bat and 30 with the ball, right? They thought he would be like a low-end Callis, right? And he ended up being like a high-end Derek Pringle, right? Like, maybe that's good enough. Maybe better than that.
Yeah.
Like a high-end, Irfan Pathan's wrong as well. I can't even think of, and so Watto ends up in this area where it's like, actually he ends up being a pretty successful test cricket.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
like it would be hard to argue that he hasn't been. KL Rahul's numbers look worse, partly because of the era that he's played in. You know, he's been hunted by the wobble ball away from home, and then the home wickets have been absolutely against batting, right? In a normal era, he probably just makes more runs at home and he's occasionally good away from home and he's a good test player. Right. Maybe he averages 42 or 43. I'm not saying it's going to be 50 or 55 or anything like that, but the flexibility he gives you. The other thing with him is, as you said, he actually does play fast bowling and seam bowling specifically reasonably well. Right. Yep. And so I think there was a real movement with people like him and Rahane where India was like, we can't just keep picking the best players against spin over and over again, smashing everyone at home. And then expecting us to be good everywhere, right? And I think that was a clear decision. And so they are willing to carry him because we know that he can play an innings like he has in Australia or South Africa or England because he gives them the flexibility and everything else. He's probably the most important batter here because he's the only one who's done it before. Is that fair? True. Rishabh Pant, I suppose, is the other one.
Yeah.
But Pant's who knows what form? Yeah. So KL Rahul is the most important batter because he's the most experienced. And so it's really good. As far as scoring, though, I don't care. There's an element if you score slower than about 37, 38 strike rate, you're going to struggle to succeed in Test cricket. And, unless you are like a BJ Watling or Pujara level defensive player, right?
Right.
Most players don't have a defense strong enough to be able to defend 12 balls in a row from a Test match bowler, right? So, there's an element of that, but he doesn't bat that slow. He just doesn't bat at the baseball speed, and he can actually pick up when he wants to. So I wouldn't even worry about that. I mean, Usman Khawaja has probably been one of the best openers in the world in the last couple of years, and has come off success in England,
too. Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry about that at all. In fact, if anything, I wonder if with England, having defensive batters might be the best option against them just because they're not patient. Right. Yeah. Ben Stokes can't help change. The amount of times I've thought to myself, oh, if he does this for a couple more overs, they're going to put a lot of pressure on. And Ben Stokes is like, okay, now we're going to put 9 players at slip. I'm going to try that. And it's like, okay, but you had them. I think patient players actually work quite well against this side because they do rip up their plans and change things so quickly.
Yeah, agreed with that. Also, because the English bowlers have a lot of inexperience playing international test cricket.
Yeah.
But yeah. I have a question for you, because you're talking about KL Rahul's average, but he's played in the international circuit. Someone like Sai Sudarshan, who was picked in the Indian test squad, he has a first-class average of less than 40. And he'll be one of the only few batters to be picked in the Indian test squad to have a first-class average of less than 40. Now, the Indian pitches in first-class cricket hasn't gotten any worse because they're all flat decks. But if you then look at someone like Karun Nair, who's coming off great Ranji form, first-class form, he's averaged more than 50 this season. There's been a debate on if Sai Sudarshan deserves to be in the test squad. So then my question to you is, how do you judge a player in terms of numbers? Right? You judge him in terms of numbers, someone who's averaged less than 40, for example, and Karun Nair has had a blistering season, or do you look at potential or a mix of both? Because there's been a lot of conversation, at least locally, about if Sai Sudarshan even deserves to be picked, because he's had a great white ball season, at least in the IPL, but not so great red ball season. But he does have experience in county cricket, so that's a counter argument. But yeah, what's your take on how do you select these? Because potentially they might just play for this same position, and that's number three, is what's been said. So how do you go about selecting a player from this?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is that I can already tell you really like averages.
I mean, it is something that we talk about.
Yeah, go and have a look at Sai Sudarshan's page now. I think there's a more important number that's right in front of you that you're missing, which is conversion rate. He has a freakish conversion rate,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, agreed. True.
So I would never pick a test player based on only their first-class batting average.
Right?
I'd be looking at multiple different things. You know, as much information as I can glean. I think we have enough video on him now to know that he can handle the best bowlers in the world, right? Whether he can do it in test cricket, we don't know. But we know he can handle the best bowlers in the world. We know that he converts incredibly well at test cricket. So once he gets in, first class cricket. So once he gets in, he does go on. He has a bit of a trouble at getting in. So that's a question mark that you have to see. And you have to see if that is like a Zach Crawley thing, right? So Zach Crawley is a fascinating one, because my issue with Zach Crawley is at no level of cricket has he ever made consistent runs, right? He just doesn't have that skill within his game. And so why would you think that that's the thing that's going to change when you get to test cricket? Right. Whereas if you compare that to, but what England people will say is, oh, but back in the day, we picked Michael Vaughan and Marcus Trescothick. And I was like, yes, but you picked Michael Vaughan when he was 28 and he'd been playing A cricket for years and was fully developed. And you probably had, if you look at Michael Vaughan, he probably has about 4 or 5 great years. Those would have been his peak batting years, even if he was in first class cricket. Right. Yeah. And so you didn't pick him from nowhere. You knew heaps about him because he'd been on all these tours with you, right? Yeah. So you knew exactly what bowlers he was good against, and you knew what his flaws were. And in Michael Vaughan's case, I think he did have a bit of an issue with nibbly, knobbly balls, you know, from medium paces, right? Mm-hmm. And Zach Crawley's probably quite similar. And then you look at someone like Trescothick. Trescothick's numbers, again, don't jump off the page. But if you look at when Trescothick made his runs, it only takes a brief glance at his first class record before he got picked for England to understand that he was making like 80 when his team was getting bowled out for 130, right? So if he's averaging 42 in that and everyone else is averaging 22, that means the wicket's probably pretty spicy, right? So with Sai Sudarshan, you'd have to go through that. So my first thing is I have enough visual data on him to know that he can play very well and is very composed and is an utter professional at a very young age. I also know that he managed to up his average without and his strike rate in 1 year, which is not a normal thing for a player to be able to do. So I would say that he's very good at learning on the job and taking things in. And that his biggest problem in first-class cricket so far has been that when he's in, he makes 100, but he doesn't get in that often. So what I want to find out about him over the next year and a half is that actually an issue that's going to always haunt him and there's nothing we can do? Is that an issue we can fix, right? Or is that an issue that it's just been dumb luck and maybe he's, you know, he will eventually get over it on his own as he matures without anything needing to be changed? So those are the questions you need to make. But the reason that you're making that compared to Karun Nair is Karun Nair's only got a conservative estimate, 18 months to 2 years. Right, he's 33, I think. Right,
he's 33.
So,
let's say he gets to 35. Most players over the age of 35 start to drop off. So if he drops off and he's not, I think he's a world class player, but I don't think he's like an S tier level player. So if he drops off from that, right, he maybe becomes a B tier player, and then he's just in the side, right? If he's at that level, chances are he only gets maybe one more year. So let's give him 2.5 to 3 years, right? If Sai Sudarshan works, you have someone who can probably bat maybe opening, maybe first drop, maybe second drop for 12 years. So you team have to make a decision which direction you want to go. I don't think you want to overlook someone like Karan Nair, right? Because I think it sets a bad precedent for other players who get good in their late 20s, early 30s, right? And, you know, not everyone's going to end up like Mike Hussey, but if you never pick Mike Hussey or Misbah Ul-Haq because of their age, you don't know which ones you're going to get. And also, there are plenty of players like Simon Kadic, Adam Voges, who have come in at, you know, 29, 30, 31 and been able to play for 5 years as a good player, right? If you can find 5 years of a well above a replacement level player, unless your team is absolutely goated, I think you should be taking that. So you want to have a look at that. But you want to be in a situation where Sai Sudarshan has to know that he is there and thereabouts, and that if you're going to bring him into the side, he probably gets 2 years where Karan Nair probably gets 8 games, right? Yeah, that's the difference between the two of them. And then you have to make that decision. But the big problem here is the way that we talk in cricket, which is that it can only be one or the other, whereas actually what we should be doing is going, let's use Karan Nair. And then occasionally when we've got an easier opponent, bring in Sai, get him comfortable and everything else. But unfortunately, everyone has to own their position in the 11 because we don't have substitutions. And so no one ever likes to be dropped. And it causes all these other issues. That's not the way the professional sport should be. Karan Nair is the one who is ready right now. We all know that, right?
Yeah.
He may not translate to Test cricket. We don't know if it's going to, but we suspect it probably will, right? Sai Sudarshan is the question mark. So that's how you should use them both. Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
Yeah.
I agree with that before we ask you the last question, because we're running out of time. I just think, I brought up batting averages because I feel like it's the simplest way to communicate to someone else.
No, it is.
But like the whole point, I get the argument about Sai Sudarshan because even in the Tamil Nadu setup, for that matter, there are batters he bats with who have better average, but also have been consistent throughout the years, but also would probably... Okay, I don't know if this is factually true, so I'm not going to say it. But there are batters he bats with who average a lot more, have been consistent, and haven't been picked. And the reason you're picking Sai Sudarshan is because he's done in wide ball setup, and I think that's where the argument comes from.
What you're saying is he's done it in the white ball setup. That's not true. What he's done it is he's done it against some of the best bowlers in the world. In Ranji, right? So that's a data set that you can't throw away. And if he averaged 35 and he had a normal conversion rate, I would be saying, this is Aaron Finch, this is Jason Roy, it's not going to work, whatever. But because I've seen how composed he is and how young he is and that he can keep going on and he has this conversion rate thing, I would just say that, how many first class games would he have played? Is it
not 30? It's about
30 odd.
Yeah.
That's like 2 seasons of county cricket. Right? Ooh. It's not a lot of games. There is plenty of availability for fluke within that record, right? For, you know, dumb luck and everything else. He could have just got a bunch of LBWs in a row. He might have got a bunch of dud pitches. So that's what I'm saying is I'm not against averages. I love averages, right? But when you're picking a side like this, you have to factor in all the different things. We actually have information of what he can do at this level. Whereas if he was 28 or 29 with the same record, I'd be like, no, of course Karan Nair is the player that you should pick. I don't care if he's 5 years older. His 3 years should be better than this 28-year-old's 3 years, right? And so it's like for like. But with Sai Sudarshan, if you can get him into the side now and get him comfortable and he becomes the player they think he's going to be, then you've got a 10-year player and your life is much better as a cricket team.
I think for the Ranji player who's a Ranji player and not an IPL player. So I feel, is this the thought coming from there?
Yeah.
The fact that I can score a lot of runs in Ranji cricket, not be picked in the IPL because I'm a red ball specialist yet. I agree with you. I think Sai Sudarshan being in the squad was no surprise to us. I just feel like If you are a Ranji player who scored a lot of runs but aren't playing in the IPL, the chances of you getting picked currently are very slim. And I just feel for that Ranji cricketer.
Remember, though, that they're not trying to pick the best Ranji batter, right? And that's a thing that you really need to, I think people have to understand, because a lot of people who love first-class cricket get really upset and they're like, they haven't picked this guy. And I'm like, him being the best Sheffield Shield batter or County batter or, you know, Ranji batter or whatever it may be, you know, Plunkett batter, isn't what they're trying to pick. They are trying to pick the best test batter, and they're also probably trying to pick the best projection test batter, right? And so they're thinking that Sai Sudarshan's ceiling is here and Karan Nair's ceiling is here, right? And that other guy you mentioned, his ceiling might be here. Their floors might be higher than Sai Sudarshan. Sai Sudarshan's floor might be all the way down. Right. Yeah. But they're probably willing to take that chance on the fact that this could be another special talent. Makes sense. Whereas the guy that you're talking about might average 38 and be really a handy player. Right. South Africa just got away from this. South Africa was doing what you just said over and over again. They kept picking the best first class players who were 27, 28, 29, 30. I could tell them that almost every one of those guys was not going to make it. Like a minute watching them in test cricket, I was like, they do not have the tools for test cricket. You are just picking based on numbers at the moment, and you're not picking on potential. D'Souza has a much higher ceiling than these other guys, right? Yeah. Stubbs has a much higher ceiling than these other guys. If they fail, that's fine. I'm not saying you pick them all at the same time, right? But that's what we were saying before. You have the situation where you have Karan Nair, so why not use both of them and get the most out of them, right? And unfortunately, that's not how we do it in test cricket. In cricket, it's like it has to be this guy, and it's like it should be both. Or you should be thinking, who does India play after this series?
After England, I think we play a test series at home, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, it's in home. Yeah, so if you try Sai in the first couple of games and it doesn't come off, right? You say to him, look, we bring Karan in now. You've now had a little bit more experience. You know what it's like to play in England. You'll be on, you know, you'll still be in the nets. You'll still be facing their net bowlers, all those sorts of things. We'll keep you here. You played some county cricket. When we get home, we might start you again, right? Yeah. And then we see how we go. Unfortunately, in cricket, we don't do that. It's this like, oh, no, well, Karan came in and he made runs in England, so he has to play in the net. Well, no, because that may not be the best thing for the team for the next 5 years. Right. And that's the issue that we cause in cricket by being so didactic about the actual 11.
Right. I think that's a good perspective that you bring in, because a lot of times, because obviously the newspapers and everything are only going to majorly talk about numbers in terms of averages and how a player is potentially done, say in the IPL or whatever it is. But it turns out that it is a mix of a lot of factors, and I think very importantly, the ceilings itself. So makes complete sense. I think we are over time right now. So we'll probably wrap this up. I
mean, can you take another question?
Okay, let's go. Let's fire it off.
Awesome, cool. On the very topic of numbers, I think one of the picks that has not come particularly from numbers for the fast bowling department for India is Arshdeep Singh. I think a lot of people have been raving about how he should be in the test setup, and he finally is. Do you see Arshdeep being picked in the 11 right off the bat, or do you think some more stable bowlers, maybe the likes of Akashdeep and these guys, get a pick over Arshdeep?
Because again, you might dislike what I'm about to say. This is just a thing that's going about. I don't have an opinion on this because his bowling averages aren't all that great. So a lot of people, even though they were happy that he was picked, there were some who were surprised because his bowling averages, even in county cricket when he had that county stint, wasn't the best. And so this is why. What do you think about Arshdeep Singh?
I still think he can be a test bowler. The issue that I think I have is teams used to always pick their best swing bowler before they came to England, right?
Mm-hmm.
But England don't bowl swing anymore. They bowl wobble ball.
Yeah.
So you're already one step behind what the home team is doing, right? And I find it, I think we assume that Bumrah, Siraj, and probably Prasheed Krishna are going to be the first three bowlers picked, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bumrah can swing the ball around if he has to. Siraj is more of a seam bowler, but certainly can hold the seam up when he needs to. And Prasheed Krishna is going to hit the pitch anyway.
Yeah.
Those are three slightly different bowlers, you know, that are going to go about it from that perspective. If Arshdeep is in the squad,
Thakur too in the middle as an all rounder.
Yeah, is what they might. Yeah, I mean, all-rounders doing a lot of heavy work for him there, but sure. And a bowler who is not absolutely terrible with the bat. So they do have another swing bowler there available to him, and Shardul can also bowl the wobble ball a little bit when he needs to as well. So there's no issues there. The issue I have is if you're coming to England now thinking that's what you need, I just don't know if that's the case anymore. And so I don't, this is one of those things. I was like, it's like when Australia used to bring over like any random off spinner that they had lying in, you know, behind the couch to play in India. And it's like, well, you're not going to beat them with a bloke who can't play for New South Wales, who's playing club cricket, right? Like, all due respect to Gavin Robertson for getting out there and bowling to Sachin Tendulkar, but he's probably not going to be able to do that. And if you wanted Gavin Robertson to be ready, you had to make sure he was ready in a way that they do with Matt Kuhneman right now. That's the professional way of doing that. Mm-hmm. Have India been making sure that Ashdeep is ready for the red ball and to bowl in these games? Because I don't think I've seen that, right? I feel like they're just like, well, you're a swing bowler, so it'll work in England. And it's like, okay. Chances are, if he's a swing bowler, he's not going to be as good a swing bowler as the swing bowlers in England who have better records than him, right? Like, there's about five of them left because they all bowl wobble ball now. But there's a couple left that still bowl it. So, again, you're going up against England with something that they're pretty used to that doesn't seem to work as well as it does in England anymore anyway. So, that's my problem with Ashdeep. I just don't think he's quite accurate enough with the red ball consistently, and I'm not sure he knows what his best ball is in red ball cricket, and because of that it's a bit of a I think that's a bit of an issue for him. If they want to take a flyer, he could. If you told me he came in and took six or seven wickets in a test match, I don't think I'd be shocked. But I also think he could go at seven runs and over in some of those games. You know, 100%, as well.
And so he did in the, and I think that's what happened in the county stint too, and one of the first class games after, I want to say, the Dilip Trophy. Before the Bordegasker Trophy, he did leak a lot of runs. I know we've taken a lot more time than we actually should have. But thank you so much for joining us. I feel like we could have had conversations on conversations about cricket and a lot of things. Thank you so much for having this conversation with us, because like we said, like, we do look up to you. We watch all your videos and we try to take something from it and try applying it.
I don't even watch all my videos.
I mean, we don't watch all our videos, so it's fair.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.